Strangely enough, I didn't know the book when I was a boy, and I might have done because of the dates when it was written. But I only discovered it a few years ago when I was looking at a friend's library shelves, and I happened to see the title, The Sword in the Stone, and I thought, that's a name I know, it's a book I've heard of. And I took it off the shelf and I began to read it, and I thought, this is fascinating stuff, and I thought, really, it's very extraordinary that it's so vivid. It's not just a retelling of the Arthurian legend. It's something much more than that, because it's got so much in it. It's got so much information about natural history and about ancient history and about English legends and about all sorts of things. And I thought, it's just so well written. And I've always got my eye out for something which might do well as an audio book. So I read on and I thought, yes, that would be actually very entertaining read out loud, because it's got such variety. It's got so many characters and it's so interesting. And so I read through to the end. I read the other books. And then, of course, in the copy that I had, the Book of Merlin wasn't included. So I bought the Book of Merlin and I read that. And I thought, really, that would make a very exciting audiobook. It might surprise you to know that the person I thought of when I was doing the voice of Merlin was Tony Benn, because he's a very forceful speaker, and I wanted that kind of elderly tone with a slightly shushy S, as if he's got a pipe clamp between his teeth, something between a saint and a schoolmaster. I guess the hardest parts for me as a reader were the dialogue scenes, because there's such a variety of people talking to each other, old, young, people with accents from different places, Scots, Irish, English. Just the interaction of those people, I think, were probably the most difficult scenes to read, to bring them alive. I think reading it out loud, the characters become more vivid, and their own personalities begin to make themselves clear, much more than when I read it to myself. The reading out loud always brings the character to me in three dimensions, as it were, as opposed to flat on the page. And I begin to find, even when I just start to read out loud and I have no idea how I'm going to characterize somebody, it comes to me because of the way they speak, which I can only assume I'm picking up the author's thoughts. I'm picking up how he was thinking of that person when he was writing him. I think one example is Leo Lyok, who I actually still had no idea how I was going to read when I came to the studio. I had puzzled over how to do her, and suddenly I found myself reading her in a slightly London accent, because as opposed to the King, who's very grand and posh and speaks the King's English, she says things like, pull the other one, because she's a kind of very ordinary girl. And she came to me actually in front of the microphone. The whole thing about my being the marathon man of audiobooks has been quite accidental as far as I was concerned. It came about because at first when I proposed doing Proust, we decided to do just Swan's Way. And having done Swan's Way, we thought, well, we might as well do Swan in Love. And having done the two, we thought, well, we might as well go on to The Young Girls in Flower and all that. And we ended up doing the whole thing. And it became from a job a kind of life work, because I went on to abridge all the books, 8 books. I translated the final book myself, because there was an inferior translation, because the original translator had died by that time, somebody else had done it. Then I was commissioned to do a program for Radio 3 on Proust, and the whole thing became a sort of life work and took about 5 years of my life. I can't say I ever get fed up with the author. I only feel my own humility in front of him, because I've been fortunate enough to do works that I admire greatly, and authors who I think are geniuses. And I think you can only really bow down in front of them. You do, on the other hand, feel certain impatience sometimes when they get on their hobby horse and go on and on about something, and you think, well, you have said that a chapter or two ago, and we have got the point, but somehow, because they're geniuses, they do manage to say it all more than once in different ways which are equally interesting. The interesting thing to me is that there seems to be a link between these three big works that I've done, the Proust, the War and Peace, and the Once and Future King. And the link seems to be that the author has written not just a story in each case, but has brought his whole life to bear on the work. And that is particularly so, strangely enough, in what I suppose was intended to be a retelling of the Arthurian legends for young people. And it turns out that this man has brought all his erudition, all his wisdom, all his philosophy, all his psychology to bear on the one book, on this story. And the story is strong enough to bear it, but it really is as if he's put everything he knows into the book.